Welcome to the Cold World Podcast. How's everybody doing? Hope you all been good. It's been busy the last few weeks, man. It's been really busy. And I'm taking a break from the struggle right now. You know, it's been a lot of stuff happening as far as in our nation with Black Lives Matter and Canada's getting rolled up on, which I'm all for. But today, I'm doing a podcast about you're gonna get to chill with like the chill Charles today, like the one who actually pays attention to certain things in pop culture, and I really want to just celebrate the I just really like the NWA movie. I loved Straight Outta Compton, and I'm gonna talk about it. That's what I want to do. I'll be back on that, on my political soon. I might even sneak some in tonight, but I just want to talk about NWA and what that movie did for me and what it meant to me. I do want to start out by acknowledging in the last podcast, it was doing this weird clipping, man. And I don't know, just to, you know, give you some insider baseball, I use Audacity normally to do my podcast. It's simple. It's free off the internet. I don't really like the interface, but it was simple enough. And that was like the second or third time that it happened. And I don't know, that upset me. I didn't like that. That clipping and it upset me because I feel like the last show I did was one of my best shows. Like, I feel like just the things that I was talking about and I just really enjoyed that show. And I was just so disappointed that it got messed up or jumbled and lost. So this week I'm trying to use GarageBand. I'ma see if it's better. It looks a bit more confusing. Like, the old GarageBand used to be really simple. This new stuff got a whole bunch of knobs and dials, and I don't know. But if there's something that you all use, anybody that does podcasts and then really just like it, let me know what software you use. Maybe use something different in both of these things. But I'll put some dollars behind it. Like, that's how much I really enjoy doing a podcast, especially since I can't hoop no more. Like, doing a podcast is one of my favorite things to do outside of like talking in front of people or publishing a good article. I love doing the podcast. So that's something that I've been working on. The other news that I have, one reason you haven't heard from me in a few weeks is Energy Converters is now a thing. It's now an entity. I filed for its LLC, and the goal and the plan is to funnel all of my writing and my speaking engagements and my consultancies through Energy Converters, like the company. So I want to be able to dedicate more resources to doing this stuff because it's just what I love to do. And I want to create some separation between me as the corporation or the entity and my personal life funds, all that stuff. So I've been working on that, and just that stuff is just it's just tedious and it's expensive, but hopefully it pays off in the long run. You haven't been hearing from me because I'm trying to get these taxes set up the right way, because the IRS does not play. It will find you. They will. I think, you know, you hear how I complain about Sally Mae. I don't want to be complaining about Sally and the government. But with that comes, I've been working on a new website. So you all already seen the website. I designed that myself. When I actually got some help to consult on the website. I like the first go round, and I think it could be better. And trying to take the feedback that I got and, you know, so I can apply it. So I'm working on that. That's going to be 2.0 of the website. Then there's going to be the 2.0 version of the podcast. And this next phase, I just want to have, you know, maybe I'll include more people, change up the topic ranges a bit more, kind of make it a bit more interactive, because the phase after the next phase, I would love to, like, include video. I would love to look like I'm doing this in a studio and be able to cut that up into smaller, more shareable clips. In order to get there, I have to try some things out in this upcoming phase. So just to give you a sense of how my mind works. Also, man, want to really shout out LeBron James. Homie is, you know, giving money to 1,100 kids to go to college. And that's just dope. That's amazing to me. And the reason why I wanted to make sure that I spoke on it is because anytime that brother does anything else, or any black superstar for that matter, does something, we find ways to tear that person down. It's just ingrained in folks. It's ingrained in this culture. So I wanted to really shout him out for doing that. He didn't have to do that. The kids just got to finish the program that he pushed them through, which is going to ultimately help them. And then they're getting some money for school, man. That's a beautiful thing. That's a blessing. I think that, you know, more folks should be able to do some things like that. I try not to count people's money. You've heard me say that before. It's hard for me to, I always take issue when other folks are telling people how they should spend their money. So I can suggest what I like to see, but that's not my money. I didn't work and earn that. But I like that he's doing that. I want to honor that. I think that that's awesome. Personally, that's just what I feel. But yeah, I want to get into this. So I saw Straight Outta Compton twice. And I saw it in two different places too. It's so funny. The first place that I saw it was, I kind of went to the movies on a Friday in the middle of the day, thinking I was going to have the theater to myself. There's a little historic theater in Oakland by the lake called Grand Lake Theater. I love that theater. I've been going there since I was a little kid. It's like one of my favorite places to go. And sometimes they get a good black movie in there. Like I remember going there with my brother to see Belly. And Belly was one of the dopest movies we had seen up until that point. Just that first scene in Belly where they going into the club with the black light and their eyes is glowing. It was DMX, Nas, Belly, hood classic for me, right? I love that. But I went there and I was expecting to be like the only person in there, and it was packed. It was packed at like 12 or 1 o'clock on a Friday, and it was like a party. And what I noticed, and then I saw it again the next day, And Berkeley. And what I noticed, it was one, the crowds was just different, right? And in Oakland, it was more of a black crowd. And when I went to Berkeley, it was a mixed crowd. And what I noticed at the Oakland show is that it was louder. So the speakers were just, I don't know if they turned them up, or I don't know if Berkeley turned theirs down, but that really impacted the movie, right? Because the first time I watched it, and especially at Grand Lake, everything hit. So every time the music played, they went to like one of the musical montages, like you felt that bass. And you know, 80s and early 90s hip hop, it was just all about the boom bap. It was just bass, right? And so it like would hit you. And folks was like, every music scene, folks was like rapping along with the lyrics, and it was just really dope. It was a dope experience. And then Berkeley, that had kind of a mixed crowd, I felt like the movie was purposely, like the volume was purposely turned down. Like I felt like there was a meeting that happened, and it was like, we don't want folks too rowdy up in this piece, so we're going to turn it down. But from start to finish, I loved that movie. The first scene opens up like it's something straight out of an action movie. And I guess I won't spoil. It's not really anything to spoil. It's like all this stuff is public information, but I don't know. That's like saying, don't spoil the end of Lincoln. Like, nah, dude, somebody shot that dude in the head. But I feel like people know what happened. I ain't worried about nobody saying I spoiled it. The first scene was dope. It was showing Eazy-E in his element, going to go do what he do. He was at a dope house, buying some drugs. The deal was about to go bad. And then, like, the police come. you know, right before it's really about to pop off with like a battering ram. And it was crazy. It opened up like something out of a straight up action movie. I thought I was seeing Mission Impossible again. It was really good. It was so good that after that scene and it went to the credits of Straight Outta Compton, people was already clapping. They was just ready, amped. And it was just, man, it's hard, man, because you know, I knew that as soon as people started saying that they liked the movie, critics was going to come, right, and bring up other things. Like, why wasn't this in there? Why didn't they talk about this or that or the third? And you just knew it was going to come, even though that don't happen in, like, when Quentin Tarantino makes a movie, right? Like, you just get to go and watch the Quentin Tarantino movie. I use Tarantino because I really like Tarantino. Like, I really like Kill Bill. I really like Pulp Fiction. Those movies are dope to me. I can't wait for the new movie with Hateful Eight. Like, I can't wait for these movies. And he gets to just make his movie. It, regardless of how many people he kill, regardless of how bloody and how gory it is, he just doesn't get held to that type of standard. But then you make a movie about NWA. NWA stands for niggas with attitude. I don't know what you thought you was about to see. And I appreciate the movie because I feel like the majority of pop culture stuff is not made for me, you know? And so when I actually get a chance to experience something that was made for me, right? Like, I want to enjoy it. And looking at that environment, I didn't grow up in, you know, in Compton, right? But I grew up in like a ghetto, and it was just, I don't know, man, it was just cool to see that stuff get pictured and not just be like this dreary place where people, you know, it's not, they wasn't asking you to feel sorry for those neighborhoods. Like, I don't need you to feel sorry for me growing up in Oakland. I loved growing up in Oakland. Like, it was a lot of things that happened that might have been unfortunate, right? But I had a lot of fun growing up, and they had a lot of fun growing up the way that they grew up. And that was one of the best parts of the movie to me, was seeing that friendship. Like, when I think of Ice Cube now or Dr. Dre now, I just see moguls. I see folks that have conquered the music game and done things that no other musicians have done. Or I see like a movie producer and director, you know, that's extremely successful, right? Like, that's making a whole heap of movies. But seeing them as kids and seeing them like do stuff that me and my friends did, like the way we would rag on each other, or the way that, you know, we would kind of be obsessed with girls, or the way that, you know, the things that we aspired to. Like, I wasn't aspiring to a 401k when I was 16. I've said this before. I was aspiring for a nice pair of shoes, a cool party to go to, cute girls at that party, and some attention from those girls. Like, that was the extent of my life planning at that moment, at that junction in time. So when they started making this music, I mean, that they kind of started just to have a good time, right? And so you follow, you know, them as they form this group. Eazy-E is the drug dealer. He's a solidified dude. And he's the one that, you know, he puts up the money for them to get started. And just for the business acumen of them at that early age to make that and to, like, produce that in somebody's basement and just rock out the way that they did, man, I thought it was dope. I thought the message of it was, if you got a dream, then you need to kind of go for that dream, whether that's music or photography or, you know, writing or whatever. And so some of my favorite moments of the movie was Cube. Most of my favorite moments of the movie dealt with Ice Cube. First off, Ice Cube was played by his son. His son did a phenomenal job. Looks just like him, you know. That was crazy. He looked dead on him. And he sounds like him. And so, you know, watching Cube, even in his first scene where he was, his school bus had gotten a kid on the bus was talking crap to somebody driving next to them. He was throwing up gang signs to some obvious bloods in the car, and he thought it was cute. This random kid, car pulls up in front, hops out. They get on the bus, and basically they threaten the kids and kind of had a message for folks, like, y'all, instead of trying to gang bang, bang these books, yada, 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 right? And Cube goes back and is with Dre and his other homie Jinx, and he was just like, yeah, somebody got on the bus and held the bus up and then gave a motivational speech and bounced out. Like, it was just funny. His character was just a really funny dude. But my favorite moments was when Cube had left the group and, you know, he signed a solo deal and he made a deal with Priority and saying, you know, we can't pay you a lot on this first one, but if this first album goes, the next one we're going to make it up. We're going to pay you. So he made his first album. The streets loved it. He was, you know, doing his thing. Goes up to Priority. They say we can't do what we said we was going to do. And Ice Cube was just looking real sincere and just was really disappointed. That's the best terms I can use right now. He was really disappointed that they didn't keep their word. So he returned with a baseball bat and proceeded to wreck that office. And that part of the movie was dope to me because I feel that everybody that's worked for a big company or that's, you know, had a rough job or whatever or felt undervalued or underappreciated would have loved to walk in to a place with a bat and make your voice heard. Yeah, he was able to live to tell that story. The police were not involved. But that was just interesting. And I've heard other stories of other rappers kind of doing that too. I've heard who else did I hear doing that? I heard 50 Cent did that at Interscope when he was trying to move Curtis and the people just wasn't moving. I heard that I heard Redman used to go real hard on people too. I don't know. I just heard a bunch of stories where you bringing in some real thorough people and you telling them one thing and then you break that and they operate by a different set of rules and it's just funny. So that was one of my favorite parts. The other favorite part was when Cube came back to that office and they wanted him to hear the NWA diss track about him before it got out in the streets, and his shock when they went at him and he was just like, I didn't say nothing about them in my album. And then he kind of sat back. He was like, okay. And then the next scene is just goes into No Vaseline. It was crazy. The theater I was in, the one in Oakland, went crazy. Like, when I say, like, when that first line comes and people realize that he's doing No Vaseline, like, folks was out their seats. Like, it was crazy. It was a part. It was a true party where I was at. And maybe that made that scene even better, like the reaction from the crowd. Like, the first time I watched it was way better than the second time I watched it. And I think the crowd watching that with people that really appreciate the music in that group, like, that was just super crazy. It was dope. I loved it, man. I'm going to probably go see it again. And so, but yeah, I just think that those guys represented a time. And they represent a part of me that just doesn't get the love, right? And so when I actually see the type of criticism that comes from it, I mean, I think some of the stuff is valid. I don't know, man. I be having an issue. So today I was out and about, right? And I was minding my business. I should have kept minding my business, but, you know, I was at this little work thing, and it was these two white folks talking. They were cool people. Like, they were straight. It was great. They were having a conversation. We all were having a conversation together. We got along, you know, and then they start talking about the movie. And I didn't say I had seen it at that point, but they just instantly went in. Well, did they talk about this and they talk about that? And it's like, hold on, time out. Let me tell you what happened. Let me tell you about the movie. Because these people didn't even... You knew that they knew nothing about, like, NWA. They knew nothing about things in my culture. Like, there was no appreciation of my culture and of parts of me. And they were just ready to just tear these people down, right? Like, I guess they called themselves bringing Ice Cube down a peg or Dr. Dre down a peg. And it's like, you know nothing about these people or what they've, the contributions that they've made to pop culture. Like, this movie to me is like an American history movie. It's not just black music history. Like, this is a part of, like, the paradigm. Dr. Dre just sold a company for billions of dollars. You see what I'm saying? Like he has revolutionized like music in a headphone industry that nobody was thinking about. You see, so yeah, they did a lot of stuff when they was young. They did a lot of stupid out of pocket stuff, which Dr. Dre actually, like, he talked about. They asked him that, and he said, "Man, I did a whole bunch of crazy stuff that I'm not proud of." And he was like, and he just flat out said, "It's a lot of stories out there. Not all of them are true. Some of them are. And I'm just truly sorry for what I was doing when I was in that mindset, in that mind frame." And it bothered me because they're so, you can make a movie about, like, remember that movie, A Beautiful Mind? And if you do the research on that cat from A Beautiful Mind, he has some real, like, scandalous things come out about him that wasn't brought up in that movie. Right? Like, you know what I mean? It's just the level of past that people get, you know? And I don't know, man. It just affected me. And I jumped in that conversation. I wasn't rude, but I just felt like I had to put on for, like, my culture, you know? Like, nah, man, that was something that was made for, like, me, you know? And if you don't like it, that's cool, but you ain't even seen it. You just ready to, like, go at it. I don't know. That's just interesting to me. Like, that just bothered me, man. It just bothered me. So, but anyway, I love the movie. It was a party. If you haven't seen it, I suggest you go see it. I probably wouldn't suggest you. It's a very adult movie. So just so you know, I don't want you rolling up in there with your 12-year-old and then being mad when you gotta, like, cover their eyes or whatever. I feel that the representation of the time is accurate. You know, I mean, I was a lot younger then. Like, I, you know, when they was rocking in 1990, I was 7, right? But I do remember coming into, like, my preteens and my teenage years, and I remember the environment. I remember house parties, man, that used to be wild. Like, I've seen some wild stuff. And if there were cameras, if I could capture those moments as well, I mean, I think that a lot of them would be just, it would be egregious as well, right? Or, like, if you could capture the dumb stuff that I did. If you could capture the dumb stuff me and my friends did, oh, my God. I'm going to just stop talking because I work with some, I want to keep working. But I had to take a sip of the tea on that one. I mean, it's crazy. So me and my friends went to Mexico. My brother came on the show and talked about it, but the show got corrupted. Again, good old audacity, right? I'm mad about that. I'll have him come back and talk about it again. But, like, we went to Mexico. Let me tell you how poor black kids go on vacation, right? We lived in the Bay. My brother just got back. He was on break from the Army. I forgot how long he had. He had, like, a few weeks. So we had a car, you know. We all met up. We went to San Diego, you know. We would go park at the border, walk into Rosarito Beach, walk over into Tijuana. And this is before they started to change the laws of how you get into Mexico. And this is before they started cutting off heads in Mexico, you know. But we would go into Tijuana, get in a taxi, go to Rosarito Beach, and we would just club hop, right? And so I got pictures on old school MySpace with me with, like, five or six wristbands because it was all these beachfront clubs and you pay like $10 to get a wristband. It was unlimited drinks. I'm in my early 20s, right? And the drinks was watered down, but you drink enough watered down tequila sunrises, you'd be right. Like it would happen for you. So we were at this at one place, and my brother got into it with this dude. You see, y'all can't judge me if I tell you this story. This is a family story. We family, so I need to trust you about this story. But I just want to. I have to give a nod to the times. I have to be authentic and honest with you about the things that happened. And my brother got into it with this dude. This is like the big, he was a local Mexican dude. He was one of the biggest cats I've ever seen. He was huge. He was a big dude with like his beard and his beard was like braided. It came down to like his stomach. Like he was crazy. I don't know what words they had, but me, I'm getting the drinks. For, you know, because I ordered some drinks and I get my money's worth. So I'm standing up on like a bar stool, like the legs of a bar stool over this crowd of like, you know, it's a bunch of Americans there because that's what we do. We go over there and we party. And that whole trip is like less than $400. It was a great trip. So I'm waiting for my drink. Dude that my brother got into it with comes up behind me. It's like patting my pockets like he's about to like rob me. I step off the stool. We like looking at each other. Like staring each other down. Dude calls my name for the drink. Soon as I turn to grab the drink, dude punched me. Just, caught one. Ate that, right? Had to eat that. And then my brother like came. Will came from behind. And it when he tells the story, he's going to put 2 out of 10. But he tells the story way better. But he did rock this dude. Like, so he like punches this dude. And then I come back. And then I'm like fighting with this dude. And then his friends jump in, and before you know it, it was 4 of us, and then it was like a bunch of them, and it is a whole bar is fighting. It is a real life bar fight. It went on for like 15 minutes. It was total chaos. It was total chaos. Early 20s. I didn't start that. I just had to protect myself. I ate a punch. It was honestly, I can't lie to you. It was one of the best nights of my life. One of the best stories I've had. I'll invite him back so he can give you like the real details. It'll be much funnier when he tells it. But like I said, if there were cameras that followed me around or that could capture those moments and I had to be authentic and honest with it, you see some ratchet. Like you, this is before these Huffington Post articles. This is before that master's degree, right? This is a different time for me. And you know, I'm not a thug. My friends are far from thugs. We're far from it. But I think that I appreciated the authenticity of the environment, right? And just how that it wasn't sugarcoated, you know. And I think that if you could capture some of the conversations that me and my friends would have, or how we would just address each other or address other people, how women would address us, how we would address women. And I think if you're being honest about the authenticity of it, you know, I think it's going to be a lot of things that make people uncomfortable. And it's hard. People are looking at this film from an ethnocentric, like, mindset. And you can't do that. If you apply the standards of where you came from to a place that's foreign to you, it's never going to align. It's never going to look quite right. And I think that's what's happening. Like, you know, it's, I don't know, man. It's crazy. It is crazy. But I really enjoyed it, man. I hope you all get a chance to see it. I'm gonna go see it again. This time I might go with a group of people to kind of get their take on it and watch it with some folks and, talk about it afterwards. But you know, these movies are really fun to go see with like hip hop heads. Like I went to go see Beats, Rhymes, and Life, the documentary on A Tribe Called Quest with some friends, and it was a party. It was dope, man. And we talked about that movie for weeks after that. We showed that movie to like students. It was I mean, just to gain an appreciation. And I didn't grow up, you know, the biggest Tribe fan. I grew up more of a West Coast like rap fan, like Tupac And, you know, as an impressionable kid, I wasn't really fooling with East Coast rap like that until, you know, until I heard this little rapper with this little album by the name of Nas and Illmatic, and it just changed my life. It is my favorite album to this day. That was just some of the most magnificent. It was just great. I love that album. But being able to watch, you know, I appreciate it. I grew an appreciation for A Tribe Called Quest as I got older, and Q-Tip and that movement, and there's a lot of stuff that I love from there. So I don't know, man. I'm sorry. I know this is not how I normally do things or how I normally rock. I just allow me to have a whole bunch of fun right now. And I'm so glad that the movie's doing well, because that's going to lend itself for us to have a wave of movies that are authentic about the experiences that I had growing up. Like that's what that means for me, man. Like you just don't understand. Like if you a white person in America, like everything is made for you. Like everything is your experience. Like your experience is inherently American. You know what I mean? Like it's just it. And so when I finally get to see that happen, where the person's not vilified, the ghetto is not necessarily vilified, like. It just kind of is the circumstances, and it's honest whether it's cringeworthy or not. Like that just means something to me, you know. It's sad that you only got Boys in the Hood, and you got a few other movies that was real authentic and showed the space. And I mean, Singleton to do that, right? Like Singleton to do Boys in the Hood, he'll do Baby Boy, but those movies don't get money. And so now that this movie has broken records and it's starting to get money, it's like, okay, maybe they'll give some folks, you know, a chance to make these kind of movies. And I want to see it from like the black woman experience too, right? Like, cause that's not my reality per se either. Like I know the environment, but growing, you know what I'm saying? Like it'll be dope, man. If I was to know more about like Lauryn Hill and what she went through in the music industry and what ultimately led her to leave. And I think that's a dope movie. And I think that when the music comes on in that, like, people would lose their minds. Can you imagine watching, like, Lauryn Hill make The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill on the big screen? And a dope actress playing her? Come on, man. Come on. Like, that would be crazy. Like, that would be crazy, right? So, hopefully it lends it. You know, now that we've seen that this could be successful, I'm hoping that we start to see more things like that. And the last thing I want to say about it is that kid that played Eazy-E, my God, yo, he was so good, yo. Like his range, the range of emotions he had, like the other actors did a really good job. Paul Giamatti did a really good job too playing Heller. You can tell like he was the seasoned actor out of the group, right? But the range of emotions that kid had to have playing Eazy-E. The opening scene where Eazy is in a crack house with a deal going bad, about to get shot, and having to play that role all the way to the last scene with Eazy in a hospital bed, yo. When that dude was in that hospital bed and he got that news, even though you knew what was going to happen, like it ripped your heart out. Like it just... And it just shows how ignorant we were at the time about that disease and about what that meant and about how you could get that. Like, it was so heart-wrenching. And that kid nailed it. Like, he nailed it. And so he got to get some type of nods. I got to see him. Like, his name has to come up for the Academy, man. And I feel like we always get duped or whatever, man. But, y'all always want to get a boy the nod. Like, that movie deserves some nods, you know? And I would love to see that. But everybody did such a good, an amazing job. Like, I saw Dr. Dre and that kid. I saw, you know, you definitely saw Ice Cube in his character. You saw Eazy-E and just the general, like, I don't know, man. Like, and he played him so well. He played him so endearing, right? Like, remember when Notorious came out and the kid that played in Notorious, like, he did a good, I don't think Notorious was as good of a movie, but it was still entertaining for me. But I think the kid that played Notorious did a good job of capturing the emotion, right? Of, like, not the emotion, but, like, the lovability that came with, like, a Biggie Smalls. Like, everybody always talked about how charming he could be and how funny and things like that. And I think that kid did a good job of that while, you know, holding on to this other bravado. And I think that this kid with Eazy-E, who was a lesser known entity, right? Like, I mean, East Coast rap just tended to get more attention because it's East Coast and all that stuff, right? But, I mean, he played so many sides of Eazy-E where you, like, really cared about this dude, you know? And that's hard to do. That's hard to do, I think, for any actor, but I think especially for a black person that is labeled a gangster rapper that wasn't endeared by the world, right? So that's my nod for the movie. They probably should cut me a check on it. Nah, man, it was dope. And I can't wait to see the things that come after. Now, black people, black movie directors and makers, and look, man, don't cut corners for that cookie, yo. We got a real opportunity. Don't cut them corners for that cookie, man. Don't take this opportunity. Don't get that $80 million, that $100 million in financing and put out some whack. Like, don't do it. Don't succumb to that movie exec, like, that want to change the movie. Like, hold the integrity, yo, and tell our stories. Tell it. I mean, I tell my stories on these podcasts and them Huffington Post, but that ain't movies, you know, or TV. We got a real opportunity. So take it. Please take it. But anyway, y'all been listening to the Cold World Podcast. Really enjoyed having this conversation with y'all. Want to hear your thoughts. Let me know. That's another thing I want to do, especially as I do the podcast differently now. Like, I want to hear from you all. I want to hear tell me what you thought about the movie. If you didn't like it, like, let's talk about it, right? Or tell me what you did like, or your favorite scenes or your least favorite scenes. Like, I want to interact with people more. Because I get it, like, folks that hit me and text me and talk to me that way, but I want to open up a broader conversation. So, and I also have the podcast is now on Stitcher as well. I kind of like the Stitcher platform. I like that platform a lot, actually. I like the way you can interact with it. So, but anyway, keep being supportive. I appreciate you all. Some new articles coming. You can find my articles on Huffington Post. You can also find them on Education Post. I have a few that should be being published there soon. And I'll keep you all informed. But as always, man, take care of yourself. And I'll see you on the other side. Peace. Just waking up in the morning, gotta thank God. I don't know, but today seems kind of odd. No barking from the dog, no small. And mama cooked the breakfast with no hog. I got my grub on, but didn't dig out. Finally got a call from a girl I wanna dig out. So hooked it up for later as I hit the dope. Thinking, will I live another 24? I gotta go, cause I got me a drop top. And if I hit the switch, I can make the ass.